Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End. It's always good to a podcast after what for win. It's even better when it's after a 5-1 away win. My name's John, and on this podcast, there's two parts of this podcast. Part number one, where the Brigadier Colin will be joining me to talk about that fantastic win away at Preston. And then part two is Jason, Mike and I. They're going to join me and we're going to start thinking about the transfer window. Basically, what can we realistically expect from that January transfer window? But that's later to come. The Brigadier is with me now. Hello, Brigadier.
Good evening. What a good evening. It's been a good day, in fact. I've watched the short highlights about four times. I've watched the long highlights. That's 10 minutes. I've watched them about three times. I've watched this match a lot.
But you watched it when you were there as well.
I was actually there.
What was it like, though? Preston, not always it's a long journey. Not the longest, but longish. And you went up there with Mr. Ollie Wicken. And what was your way trip like to Preston?
It was excellent. We got the train about 10:30. We got to Preston at 12:38, I think. It was all, on rails. No delays. And then we found a nice place to have lunch. And then we walked to the ground. And it's a lovely walk, actually, from Central. It does feel like proper old school football, walking down Deepdale Road. With the floodlights were already on and there's cars piled up on the pavements and people walking. And yeah, I mean, it felt very kind of authentic. An English away day. It felt very authentic. And and then we got the lineups, John, and we were all a bit confused.
Yes, very, very confused. I think I got to the point where I was like going, I'm just going to wait and see what happens and see. Hopefully, maybe this might be one of those fantastic things they do on the continent where everything's fluid and everyone can play in every position all at once. who was going to end up where? And I suppose the interesting one, look at that lineup, it did give opportunity, I suppose, for a few players who have played and made some substitute appearances, but starting with Tom Delibashiru, Bayo and Martins, three players that, well, Bayo really hasn't got any sort of foothold into the season. Tom Delibashiru and Martins did, but very early on, and recently they haven't really been part of that starting 11, the 11 that we've been really getting comfortable with, knowing what they are, knowing what they can be and what they can achieve and can't achieve. But for you, looking at those boys coming in, I suppose they're the big difference. Who, Sean?
Well, it's hard to say that any of those three... Well, actually, no, that's not fair. Bayo, Sean. Bayo had his best ever game in a Watford shirt.
Okay.
And it's been coming, I've felt. Like, when I've seen him come on, he's harried, he's pressed, he's been lively, he's more integrated with the midfield and the wide players than Rajovic, who often gets isolated, but he's there for a reason. And I thought, I was walking to the, when we were on the train, I was thinking, I hope he picks Bayo today. If we're going to go away and press, then let's get Bayo in the side, because he's got an appetite for it. And so, despite missing a very easy chance early on, where he worked really hard to get to the ball and nipped it past the keeper, was unable to finish, I thought, oh God, I hope that hasn't affected his confidence. Not a bit of it. Bayo is an irrepressible human being. And I think under Val, he's had a lot of arm around the shoulder. I believe in you. I trust you. I want you to run. Just keep running, keep pressing, and your time will come. And that time came yesterday.
It's fascinating you sort of say that about, his headspace, because he must have felt so out of love. He turned up, not this summer, the summer before, was with us for 6 months, did a little bits and bobs, and then was just shoved out again. And he must have come back going, well, am I going to be here? Is anyone going to like, it must have been massive for him as a player with Valerian sort of doing something to get part of him. And he hasn't left him out, but Rajovic seems to be the number one choice. And we've already recorded the rest of the podcast, but Jason does mention that thing about the fact that two of them should really be being played or started depending on who we're playing. And you're absolutely right, I think there. Yeah, yesterday seemed to be, if we are going to press, we do need the Biomeister in the side.
Yeah, and he was on it right from the start. But then, to be fair, it was very much, to use the old cliche, John, a game of two halves. The first half looked like a normal game of football, and the second half was incomprehensible as a football fan. We walked, all of us, including them, presumably, although they were just miserable, but all the Watford fans were like, I don't really understand what happened there. What happened? Tactically, what happened? What did he do? How did we end up scoring all those goals in the second half? We really couldn't work it out. So it's good to be on this podcast and to discuss it, and maybe we can come up with a few answers. But to look at the first half, when we realised that Deli Bashiru, and I think it's interesting that he picked him. So Andrews didn't play, Ince didn't play, Asprilla didn't play. Hmm. So the left side of our team that we've got used to watching, none of them were playing. And the reason was given that it was to do with fatigue, player management. We've got four games coming up in 10 days, starting on the 23rd, or 9 days, I think, the 23rd, the 26th, the 29th and the 1st. So obviously he's planning for that and wanted to rest players. He doesn't have a right back, although he could have played Porteous right back from the beginning and brought in Serralta as he did, or maybe Pollock or whoever. But he chose not to. He chose to play a midfielder in a fullback. The problem was that, as far as we could tell, and it was pretty clear after about a minute and a half, Deli Bashiru has never played as a fullback, and it was pretty obvious. Also, the other problem was that their best player was a left winger, and so that didn't help. And so what happened was that he got roasted quite quickly on. Either the guy cut inside or went past him as if he literally wasn't there. He didn't know what his positioning was. But then when we occasionally got the ball, he would step up into midfield in the way that Alexander-Arnold, John Stones does, you know, that sort of defender coming into the midfield to create overloads. Then suddenly it looked like, okay, well, this is an interesting decision. But before we get into all that, I think it's interesting that at some point this week, Valerin must have gone to him and said, I want to rest Andrews today on Saturday at Preston. Are you willing to play at right back? Now, let's not forget, this player was dropped for being late to a team meeting. There's been rumours about him not having necessarily the greatest attitude towards, you know, turning up on time, being fit enough, working hard enough, all these things. But he went to him and said to him, I'd like you to play at right back. And he would have said, Gaffer, I've never played at right back. And he said, I know you haven't, but don't worry. It'll be fine. So he goes, okay. So he's reintroduced into the team in a position he's never played in. And so what is that? Is that punishment? No, because you wouldn't.
No.
That'll be suicide. So it's as you said earlier, providing him with an opportunity to come back into the team in an unusual position because of a need and say, will you do everything you can for the shirt, for your teammates, for the fans, for the club, for me? Will you do it? And he obviously said yes.
And I also think it's interesting with the fact that we only have Andrews on that side, because Ngaki is injured. There are a lot of games coming up. It's almost maybe, I mean, how did Deli Bashiru played what? He played just over the hour, I suppose, in that position before Porteous came on.
You know,
the fact that he's put him on now at Preston, who aren't rubbish. They're not like the bottom of the league team.
Good Lord, no, they're not rubbish.
No, but the fact that he didn't do it against Leicester. He didn't do it against Southampton. He didn't do it against Ipswich. The fact that he's going, right, I might need backup here, and I can't just wait until it's needed. So maybe I do just have to, you know, I do have to see what happens. I think the fascinating thing really about that is that he put Serralta next to him. He didn't go Hood, Porteous. He probably said to Serralta, right, you're starting, but you need to be, you know, you need to be very secure with him and behind him and with him, just to sort of make it a little bit more solid.
Yeah,
because that didn't happen. Because it's experiment.
That didn't happen at all. No. In fact, the player that kept coming over to help was Hoot. So he's pulling himself horribly out of position to try and support him. And I don't blame Deli Bashiru because it's not his position.
No.
And I don't blame Martins or Kayembe either, because at half time they made a tactical change. But he'd obviously told Martins not to come back, to stay at the halfway line, to be available for the transition, for the counter-attack. So he was left very exposed. In the second half, Martins dropped a lot deeper and protected Bashiru. And all the success that Preston had down that flank, the left flank for them, in the first half evaporated. And that player was no longer having any effect. But in the first half, before he realised... And I think also it was good of Val, because he could have just pulled him off at half time and said, I'm really sorry, Tom, that was my fault. I shouldn't have put you in that position. I'm going to put Porteous in there. He didn't do that. He said, I've made a decision. you didn't get the help you needed. I'm going to get you the help. And then immediately in the second half, you saw Kiembe running over as soon as it came down the left wing, and you saw Martins retreating and protecting him. And so that was a tactical mistake, I would say, on the part of Val to leave him so exposed, but he corrected it at half time, and then we looked a lot more solid. And the goal that they scored eventually came from that player, that winger, coming past Bashiru as if he wasn't there, yeah, and crossing it in, and the lad got in between the two central defenders and popped it in. And at that point, we'd had two really good chances. The Bayou one, that where he hit it straight at the defender and he cleared it. And there was another one at the far post where they got in each other's way. And they had also had they had a header that, I mean, as soon as the bloke headed it, I thought, well, that's in. And yeah, somehow Hamer got across. And then there was another one at the other top corner. I think it was a shot, and he got up and he just got his hands on it. And it was like, this lad's keeping us in this game, because at that time you were thinking, they get a second, they could run off with this. We're looking a little bit like the game was not being played in the way that, as I said, like normal football, where you see shapes and patterns and kind of, you know, it was all a bit pell-mell. It was a bit like the Coventry game, when we went away to Coventry, and goals just were being scored left, right and centre for no good, you know, you couldn't really tell why. But then I think we got a bit of good fortune, although a very good goal, with Bayo having had his miss. Thinking, is his head going down? Is his heart, you know, he's humiliated himself in front of all these people. And I don't know if footballers think that way. Anyway, not a bit of it. Hoot gets the ball, dummies the man, crosses it in. And it wasn't quite a diving header. I'd say it was a stooping header, John. It was an estupinian header. He just leant down and popped it in. But it's a good finish. And we scored in the 42nd, 43rd minute. Mm-hmm. And so half time comes, and we're all standing there saying, what's he going to do about Bashiru? I bet they're having a right go at each other in there. And I'm not sure that's true. I think he would have said, that's my fault. I didn't protect you. Sorry. I'll get you the protection you need. This is what we're going to do. And they came out second half. And of course, I think what Preston had said was, this lot are here for the taking. Let's get out. Let's press them. Let's attack them. We can win this game. And of course, within 15 seconds, their plan had been ripped to shreds. But I want to talk about that goal, because Ollie and I had long conversations on the way home, delayed trains and Palace fans causing mayhem on their way back from Manchester. So there was quite a long journey. But we were talking about patterns of play, about players who are beginning to understand how other players play. And actually, even in those 15 seconds, I noticed, when I look back at it now, look at the highlights, there's a real change in the way that we're thinking as a team. So it breaks down. Bayo's got it. Over his shoulder, he sees Martins getting on his bike. Now, normally, a player thinks, I'll take responsibility for this. I'm going to turn and try and push it between the opposition's legs and get it out to Martins. But Bayo doesn't choose to do that, because he's got Kone standing in front of him 5 yards away. So he just rolls the ball to Kone, and Kone pings it, because no one's pressing Kone. He's in space, and he plays a really good ball, and Martins runs off and does what Martins does. And it's a really, really good finish. And at that point, we've scored two goals in under 5 minutes, obviously either side of half time. And then we're all panicking, going, well, it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough. They're going to score. They're going to score. They're going to score. And about 8 minutes later, we get another one. And after that, it was just a celebration, a party. They fell to pieces. They didn't seem to have any shape. They didn't know whether to attack us or whether to reset. It was just, you know. But it was just interesting, those tiny details where you think normally a player just sort of gets the ball, sees a player making a run, going, oh, if I can just get it to him, he might score, panicking a little bit. Just that calmness. Oh, there's Kone. Here you go. Here you go, Ishmar. Have it. Here you go. Thanks very much. Ping. And off he goes. Martin goes and scores a goal. Those are the sort of things that I think we're starting to see with this team. These little patterns of play, these understanding of, you know, it's becoming, as I've said before, I think the way we play is becoming more instinctive. Players are making decisions about what they're going to do with the ball before they get the ball. Whereas in the past, in recent months, ball comes to you, put your foot on it. What am I going to do? Who's available? Where are they? Oh, I don't know. By which time someone's got up in their face, and then they have to turn around and play it back to the keeper, or they lose it. And now it's like, pass me the ball. I'm going to pass it over my shoulder because I know he's there and he wants it. And then, you know, then I'm going to move into this space. I might get it back. So you're starting to see these patterns of play. So whatever they're doing on the training ground is just getting embedded into these players' psyches. And we're starting to play well. But the really big, big thing about that game, John, is how much better we are in transition. And that is to do with instinct and understanding where players are going to be, because you've drilled it and drilled it and drilled it during the week. Because when we won the ball, I mean, almost as Ollie said, almost all the goals we scored were counter-attacking goals. That is something we've not seen, that level of quality in transition. Win the ball, boom. It's all very well pressing, but if you win the ball and you don't know what to do with it, then what was the point of pressing? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think the fact that we've seen a steady, not quite steady, but pretty much steady 11, that at least they are developing patterns. And then if anyone else does come in, they can fit into what is there rather than almost like starting from scratch. But I think what you said about that instinct, I think they instinctively were celebrating with each other, going to their, doing little dances together, knew the moves, they're in sync. I know this was a strictly dancing final yesterday, but I think you're right. It's the little things that are really sort of creeping through that show that sort of unity. And I was chatting, I went to a certain place to watch the game, and I was chatting to a friend of the podcast, Stu, and he sort of said, I said, you know, this 5-1 away, we likened it, of course, when was the last time we won 5-1 away? And it was in Cardiff in the Premier League where Delafeu got that hat-trick. But it's sort of, in terms of the time of year, not perfect, of course, but it does liken to that Fulham 5-1 win. Now, I don't think we've quite got the same team, at the moment at least, that could do that. But that came after a turgid November for Watford. And it was really early in December, I think it was. It was on telly, it was on Friday night. And that sort of kicked on. And then it was in January, we had the Charlton 5-0 win. Yep. And then the Blackpool the following weekend. So it's really sort of like, you're thinking, okay, where my head was like going, this is never going to happen. Slowly it's creeping up on me that maybe this is a chance where we can at least start thinking a bit more, not seriously. I don't want anything to be too serious this year. I want a fun year. But I want to, you know, that sort of possibility of a solid playoff run is going to be clear. And I'm only going to say playoff because if you look at where Leicester and Ipswich are, they're both of them have got more points than Burnley had at this point last year. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. On the way home, we were buzzed up about the game. We walked back to the station and had a cup of tea and waited for the delayed. Our train got cancelled. We had to get the next one. Then that got delayed. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. And after it was a good hour and a half after, and I said, oh, that's interesting, Ollie. He went, what? He said, neither of us have looked at the table. We're just enjoying the fact that we've gone to Preston and watched what was a sparkling performance with some clinical finishing. And obviously not great defending from them, but you know, they gave our players quite a lot of time on the edge of the box, and that's where the goals came from. But you know, we weren't thinking, well, right, so now we've got 3 points, so we've got to play Blackburn together, we can get into the top six. And you know, we're not really thinking like that. What we're revisiting is just something more pure, which is the enjoyment of going to watch a team of players that you're starting to really get fond of. There's a lot of players in that team that I really, really like, who are improving and playing with real exuberance and joy. And that's a pure experience for us as fans, rather than this endless obsession with, are we going to be promoted and, you know, or are we going to get relegated or whatever, you know. So that feels very pure and natural, and it feels really good. Interestingly, I thought yesterday, despite all the changes he made on the right hand side, what I'm going to refer to now as the heart of our team, Livermore, Kone and Kayembe, he did not touch that unit. He left it.
That's interesting. Yeah, that is very interesting.
And if you draw a picture of a football team with 11 players in a 4-3-3 formation, and your middle three, Livermore, Kone, are in a diamond shape, if you like, with Kayembe and Kone slightly ahead of Livermore. That's like, you can put a circle around that and say that's the heart of the team. That's the engine room, whatever you know analogy you want to use. And then you've got your fullbacks that get forward. You've got your wide players. You've got your striker up front, and everything can move in a kind of orbit around what is now becoming the heart of our team. Hence the fact that if Deli Bashiri is going to play, he's probably going to have to play wide on the right or as a fullback or a wing back. He's not going to get into that three. He's not going to touch it because, however knackered they get, and Kayembe must have some kind of engine because that man runs and runs and runs. Livermore does less running. He doesn't need to because he's there in that more withheld position. But the other two. And Kone yesterday, my God, the improvement in that player. Mm. Ollie said to me, he's so silky. He's like an eel. He gets the ball, he can wriggle through.
You can't go from silky to eel.
Well, they're silky, aren't they? Well, they're kind of.
I know, but one's lovely and high quality. Yeah. The other one's an eel, yeah, with mashed potatoes.
He's a silky eel, I'm saying it. And he does that thing where he gets the ball at his feet and he kind of wriggles through between players. They can't get it off him. Kiembe is a bull who just runs and wins. And he's got an appetite to score goals. I mean, there's no doubt. But the high point, I think you asked me just before we started recording what my favourite goal was.
Yeah.
And actually, it wasn't the finish was terrific, but it was the moment before the finish, which was just like, you know, a nice big glass of Christmas Baileys, because Kiembe got the ball. He'd already scored. And I thought he's looking for a second. And then he just looked around and saw Bayo just make a little darting run. And he just played the perfect ball between three or four defenders into Bayo's foot. And he finished it instinctively the first time. And I was like, oh, my God, what happened there? Kiembe can do that as well. He can whack it from outside, which he's done already in the past, once this season, scoring from just outside of the edge of the box. Done it again in this game. Now he's got this little dinky pass, and he covers a lot of ground, and he, you know, presses players. It's like Kiembe is becoming really a very important player in our team. And obviously one has to mention Hamer, because I don't think he covered him.
Kept in it loads.
Yeah, and he didn't have a great game on Tuesday. I thought we played really well on Tuesday. In some ways, we were a better football team on Tuesday, despite losing, in terms of the way we played. We were very unlucky. First game of the season, I think, where I felt we got less points than we deserved. There's been plenty of games where I felt we probably shouldn't have won at Hull, but we got that goal. We won at Swansea in the last 10 minutes from a good shot from Semmer. We were picking up points. You think, I'm not sure we really deserve 3 points in that game, or a point against Southampton or against Millwall, where we come back late on and get an equaliser. But that Ipswich game felt like the first game where it was like, we didn't get as many points. How are we going to respond? Going up there, Preston are above us. They're having a good season, but they looked very disjointed. Once the goals rained in, they sort of fell to pieces. And it's just interesting that we seem to be able to have maintain a level of play which we are not dropping below. The results will change, because that's the nature of football, because it's all about moments. But the commitment and the togetherness and the actual plan, if you like, and I know Mike is very hot on what's our plan, you know, what's the plan to score a goal? He said it early in the season when we were getting beat, when we lost three in a row. It's like, we don't have a plan. Now it feels like there is a plan. And I think it goes back to this thing, this heart, these three players that are the engine room, the centre of our club at the moment. And you know, they're working very hard together. I'm sure they're training hard. They're just, everyone's got their head up. And it feels like we have to be taken seriously as a team. Whereas last season, you know, we all fell out of love a bit, because it was awful. Players looking like they weren't that bothered. There wasn't a plan. There didn't seem much togetherness. And now suddenly we've transformed into this new side. And obviously a 5-1 win kind of colours that view a little bit. If we'd won it 1-0 or 2-1, maybe we wouldn't be feeling so... I wouldn't be saying the things I'm saying now. And, if, you know, when you score five, obviously it's like, wow, happens so rarely. But it'll be interesting to see. You've got another tough away game. You know, can we rinse and repeat? Can we go again? Is he going to bring Andrews back in? Is he going to play Espria? What's he going to do? How's he going to manage the next four games? They come very thick and fast. Then we get a bit of a break. But the next four games, that's 12 points. You can't just say, well, it doesn't matter what happens in the next four games. We'll get a few points. His plan will be to win every game, and he'll have a plan, and the team seem to be buying into his plan, even when the fans were like, what's Deli Bashiri doing playing a right back? He looks hopelessly lost, but somehow he managed to solve the problem, and we went and scored four goals in the second half. So, you know, what's to say, John? It's all glorious.
A podcast made by Watford fans, for Watford fans, from the Rookery end.
Watford women win action today. Mike was there, and he said this little report.
Hello, this is Mike at a cold and increasingly dark Grosvenor Vale. Of course, the home, or at least the spiritual home, of Watford women, where it looked like it was going to be a really, really good Watford weekend. Golden Girls raced into a 3-0 lead. Michelle Aguiman, who scored two, and forced an own goal all in the first 7 minutes of the game. Watford absolutely flying. And at that stage, it felt like this team were going to get what they deserved, because I've seen a fair bit of them this season, and they've whilst the scorelines haven't gone their way, the results definitely haven't gone their way. More often than not, the team have really, really threatened and have been in games, more recently against Crystal Palace, where they lost, I think it was 3-1 Palace in the upper echelons of the league. And it was only mistakes, really, that cost Watford in that game. By and large, they've been really competitive. I just haven't been able to get the games over the line. So after 7 minutes, 3-0 up, it felt like finally this side are going to get their just desserts. But as it is, I'm standing here, I can see the team out there having a prolonged post-match mortem in their huddle in the centre circle. They do it after every game. They talk through what's happened. But instead of celebratory, there's, like I say, a bit of a post-mortem. It's ended 3-3 with the visitors, London City Lionesses, with the visitors, London City Lionesses, equalising in the 92nd or 93rd minute. And it's a real shame because Watford had, perhaps it happens, like, doesn't it, in games sometimes. You go ahead so quickly and there's a long time to go. There's a long way to go and a lot can happen in 83-plus minutes. And the London City Lionesses came back into it at 3-2 with 10 minutes to go. But ironically, that spurred Watford into action, and they played some of their best football in those last 10 minutes. They really started playing the ball around nicely. They'd made some substitutions. Bianca Baptiste had come on up top. And they just started playing some really, really nice stuff. And I thought, right, OK, they're going to get this over the line. They're going to get a fourth and seal the deal. But as it was, they were hit with a sucker punch right at the end. And it was it ended 3-3. London City Lionesses down there with Watford at the wrong end of the table. And these are the sort of games where the Hornets really did need to get a win to get their season up and running, really. I was at that Charlton earlier on in the season where they did get that win. But since then, they've been really, really struggling. And relegation is starting to look like a very, very real possibility, unfortunately, for the Golden Girls. This was one where they really needed to get the 3 points. And disappointingly, they just weren't able to get it done. And like I said, it just feels a little bit like the story of the season. Really, really good in patches. A little bit of bad luck in other patches. There was lots of, it got very, very stop-start, very bitty. There was a lot of London City Lionesses players going down, seemingly with injuries, and then having a lot of time for treatment and then able to carry on, and lots of substitutions. I think there's a total of 9 substitutions in the game. So the rhythm disrupted, and that felt like that got to them a little bit. But yeah, story of the Golden Girls season, really, definitely good enough in patches, and then just finding it hard to get it over the line. What I will say, it's always entertaining, whether it's at Grosvenor Vale or Vicarage Road or on the road with the Golden Girls. It is always entertaining. So if you can get along to support them, I know it means a great deal to the team, and you're going to get entertained. Whether you're going to get the result you want as a Watford fan, not entirely sure of that at the moment. But 6 goals here at Grosvenor Vale, but unfortunately it's finished Watford 3, London City Lionesses 3.
The noise I always like to dig out of the Microsoft Windows opening, because we know that very soon on this here season of Watford, the transfer window will be opening. Joined now by Mike.
Hello, John.
Hello. And Jason.
Hello there.
And we recorded this a couple of days before the Preston game. So the Brigadier and I had a chat about the game, but we want to make sure that we weren't necessarily discussing this with a heavy defeat or anything sort of. We want to have a good chat about what this transfer window needs to be. And a bit of clarity is important. You know, Mike, this January transfer window, let's talk about this first. We're not quite sure who's in charge of this January transfer window because, firstly, in the summer, we had Ben Manga and Gino, of course, and Cristiano Giaretta, all at the club, all doing this transfer business and looking after the players. Ben Manga left and Gino's still there. And the club sort of really started to, it seemed to be, you know, giving an interview to the Watford Observer of Cristiano Giaretta it was, you know, sort of amplifying him a little bit. And then last week, he resigned and he's gone off to Cyprus. We know Gino's in charge. Is this going to be a bad thing for this January transfer window that this has changed?
Look, I don't think it's going to make much difference. I think Gianluca Nani is back. He knows the football club. He knows Gino Pozzo. And more pertinently, Gino Pozzo obviously knows and trusts him. There's big question marks over Watford's transfer activity in the past couple of seasons. We obviously didn't recruit well enough to stay in the Premier League. When we were in the Premier League, when we came down, we didn't put together a side that was cohesive and coherent enough to challenge to get back into the Premier League. And then the most recent window was the summer window before this season. And for all intents and purposes, it looks like the piggy bank is empty, because judging by who came through the door, it was limited, wasn't it? I think there's no real questioning that there was money spent on Rajovic, but apart from that, there wasn't much in the way of investment. And so you could argue that if there's a financial implications, financial constraints, then potentially, does it really matter which one of those men that you reeled off was in charge? Of course it does, because some people are more talented, some people's black books are bigger and more effective than others. So I think what we will go into this transfer, again, we go into a transfer window with Watford not really knowing what to expect. If Watford are, which they are doing, showing signs of improvement, will Gino be tempted to dig a little bit deeper into the piggy bank, perhaps start looking behind one of his luxury Italian leather sofas or maybe suede sofas to see if he can find a few million quid down the back there to strengthen? The honest answer is we don't know. We're guessing. In Nani coming back, there is a tried and tested sort of working relationship there. It sounds like Valerian Ismail expects some money to be spent during January, so we'll see how that pans out. But then, of course, you had to have had everything into the after you've sort of dealt with all those ingredients, all that uncertainty. Is there any money? Who's going to be doing the signings? Have we left it too late to bring in whoever is doing the signings? What actually is available is the other question. I'm always a little bit dubious about what's out there in the January market. So if it is going to be a successful window, and every football club, certainly football clubs in Watford's position and on Watford's size, are going to have to be very, very cute and potentially a little bit lucky. So that's a very long-winded answer to a relatively simple question. But ultimately, I think the January window is always a challenge. How much of a challenge it is going to be for Watford remains to be seen.
Because, Jason, if you look at the squad we've got at the moment, it's doing okay. It's functioning. It's improving. And there's always, I mean, I think there was a tweet we had today, Mark, if you remember. I don't know what comment it was from. We need six new players in. I can't remember who said it. I think it was Dan.
And Dan Cohen. Hello, Dan. Oh, Dan's been with us from absolutely minute one, so much appreciated. Died in the wool Hornets fan. He's had enough at the moment. He's pretty grumpy, yeah. Won't mind me saying about that. I don't think, you know, if you take Dan's stance, he's probably right.
And it's what's needed.
If we want to be aiming for top six, we need to be adding. I don't think he's saying that's what he expects. I think he's saying that's what we need. I think if anyone is genuinely expecting that sort of number of bodies in, I think there's probably going to be they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, but in terms of the squad, Jason, we've seen it improve. You know, how far away do you think it is from being a squad and a team that could push for, I don't say comfortably, but really be there or thereabouts in terms of this, you know, a push for a playoff place? How far off do you reckon?
Probably still a bit of a way off from a playoff place. I don't see this as being a playoff team. I think we're probably where we should be. Well, we are where we should be, because that's the table. The table never lies. Cliche. I mean, obviously, form has been good. We've only lost two in the last 11, and that probably is playoff form. There's quite a few draws in there, but that probably works out. In fact, it's very close to the Jason Bailey win your home games, draw your away games, and you're in the mix formula. That's good. Can I see that form continuing throughout the rest of the season? Probably not. I think we'll have some blips. There are probably areas that are glaring that everyone will be talking about in terms of where we do need to strengthen in January. There are perhaps areas where we think if we lose this player, if this player gets injured, what's the backup look like? If they go, then we would struggle. Areas there may be. But generally, I don't think it needs a massive overhaul. I guess it's what's the target? Is the target to reach the playoffs? Well, of course it is. You want to win games. But do we realistically think we can do that without a complete overhaul and disruption? And like Mike says, with what's available, probably not. We probably have to settle, perhaps the wrong word, but, and I don't want to say cut our cloth either, but the target itself needs to be right. It doesn't need to be stupid, silly. It needs to be reasonable, well-managed and appropriate for the club and the position we're in at the moment.
Now, I'm going to be the first one to say it. We need a new striker, but let's leave that for now. I suppose, Mike, the thought process for me goes, we know how little that was invested, because I think there's a difference between investing and strengthening. In terms of investment we saw in the summer, it was very, very low. I think I looked on Transfer Market today, and you could sort of put it at £50 million plus in terms of what we made in the green on that transfer window with João Pedro and also Ismaïla Sarr going. If we were to have money to spend, my gut says it comes from selling some stuff or offloading even some stuff. And there's a sort of, I bet you the first person that came into your mind when I said leaving the club, it was either Iman Louza or it was Tom Delibashiru. Can you actually see them, and I don't mean selling them, can you see them leaving the club this transfer window?
I can see potentially them wanting to, but I think we need to look at this from a purely selfish and hopeful point of view. We're about strengthening, and I don't think we want to be looking at players leave. You might be absolutely right, and you probably are right to be pragmatic, to think there might need to be money in if there's going to be players coming in. I think Iman Louza will almost certainly be having designs on leaving the football club. He is talented, but has struggled to channel that talent into a way that is making him, to put it bluntly, useful for the club. And Valerian Ismaïla has made a fairly clear statement in dropping him. What we've seen in this Watford side is that they're in the trenches together. They're where we want them to be. They stand shoulder to shoulder. They give it everything. They've been unlucky against some of the better teams in the division, probably should have beaten Southampton, probably should have beaten Ipswich. And they got themselves into that situation by being tough and standing together and fighting and not rolling over. That's something that Valerian Ismaïla has instilled in this squad. It's taken time. He's had to turn them round. I still think they look a little bit lacking in belief. But Iman Louza hasn't featured. And it's not because he's not talented. It's because he's, I don't think, evidently committed or is able to commit to what this Watford team looks like. So I don't doubt for a minute that he would want out. I also don't doubt for a minute that we've got designs on selling him in the summer for a reasonable amount of money. If you're looking about shifting him now, which I don't think we are, you'd be struggled, because if you're going to go to someone and say, right, I want 5, 6, 7, 8 million quid for Iman Louza, they're going to go, well, why are we going to pay for someone that isn't even getting into a Watford team that is spent more time in the bottom half of the Championship than the top half?
Yeah, but there's deals to be made, though. That could easily be, God, I'm going to sound like I know what I'm talking about with transfers, but I really, really don't.
First time for everything, mate.
Yeah, I know. But you could easily see him going to a certain level club, and what you're saying is the other team risking something. So the other team could easily say, all right, we'll take him. Here's a transfer. Here's a, you know, a loan fee that you get. You're getting his wages off the bill maybe as well. But if this and this happens in the coming month, then that triggers a selling clause.
Maybe.
And that could easily happen. But also that's relatively low risk for them, I suppose, in terms of they will be guaranteed a certain money if he can go and do what he can do in a place where he's probably going to feel a little bit happier, because he's not feeling happy. He isn't in the good books at all of Valerian. He did get a chance to shine at Hull, but he didn't. And the minute Kone comes back on again after, you know, because he'd been away, I think that's the only reason with Canada, the only reason why Louza got any sort of minutes. He didn't shine. He didn't sort of impose himself. And as Colin sort of said on that podcast, he sort of said he was trying to do his things and trying too hard, but not being a player. So if he's not useful...
But he could be. I think you're right, John. I think that anything is possible. And if anyone can structure a deal, it's Gino Pozzo. And obviously there's the Udinese link. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that he could go over there. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that potentially a lower Premier League club is looking to strengthen, is looking for someone slightly mercurial, and that there is a deal to be done there. However, I think that he could be useful for Watford. If he went in January, we wouldn't be realising his full value. We would also be losing someone who, we've spoken at length about how he's not contributing at the moment, but we've got December is in chock-a-block. The matches come thick and fast. There are going to be injuries. There are going to be suspensions. He will get a chance to come back into the team. And he is a good player. So if he leaves, ultimately the squad is weakened. And I don't think they'll get the money that they've got their eyes on for him at this stage. So I know why you're asking the question, but I would prefer to think that they'd hang on to him, realise his full value in the summer, and he pulls his socks up and plays a part, a full part in this squad and their progression and improvement.
Jason, like I said it first, so it's my idea. We need a striker. But we were chatting outside because, you know, we were outside the Ipswich game afterwards, sort of saying, what do we need? And, you know, you want one person that sort of does all the things that we've sort of currently got in Healy, in Bio, in Rajovic. We want all those sort of things all put together again. But that's very unlikely anywhere ever, let alone in this January transfer window, or any January transfer window. Can you imagine a scenario where actually we might get a player that could add something? I'm not saying the perfect player, but add something to it. Because, you know, I think I had to also say, the difference between this being a promotion side and not is last time we were promoted, we had Igalo, Deeney, and we had Vidra. And Forestieri, I suppose. We don't have that now, do we? And we're not going to get that. Where is this strength possibly going to come from?
If we're going to get a striker in, if it happens that we get a striker in that makes a massive difference like that, it's going to be luck. It's going to involve luck. It's going to be a loan or a signing out of nowhere, something untried, untested. It's a gamble. It's a risk. The phrase you often hear people say is, oh, we need a 20-goal-a-season striker, especially when, like us, you're playing one striker up front on their own. You're looking for a lot of goals to come from them. If you actually look at sort of looking at the top goal scorers in the Championship before the Ipswich game, because we're halfway through the midweek fixtures. So if you look sort of before the latest round, and it's not perfect maths, but we're almost halfway through the season. So if you want a 20 goal a season striker, you're probably looking for someone that's into double figures or close to. There are three players at the moment on double figures at the top of the goal scoring charts. That's how rare they are. If you want a proven 20 goal a season striker, that's going to cost you a lot of money. No one's going to give you one of those for free. If you're looking to take someone who perhaps is at the level above and not quite getting game time, that's going to cost you money. If you're looking for someone who's doing well in the division below and looking to step up, that's still going to cost you a lot of money. Anything else is a gamble, is a risk. So it's a really tricky one, and we're not going to be the only ones looking for a striker. There will be plenty of other clubs doing the same. It'll be a seller's market out there, and as you say, we haven't got the money.
We've got to unlock that final third somehow, and there is talent up there. Ken Semmer continues to play well. I think Lewis and Andrews play a pivotal role in getting forward. I don't think we've seen the best out of Yasser Espria yet. Chakwetadze, jury out on him. Mateus Martins, plenty suggesting that he's one of the best attacking players in the squad, but he's not getting a game either. We haven't unlocked that final third, and I think part of that potentially is down to the pragmatism that Valerian Ismail brings to his sides, and I think that's right. He had to turn around a team low on confidence, a team that was too easy to beat, a team that had got into a habit of effectively rolling over, but they just haven't got the combination right up there. Rajovic is the man in possession of the number nine shirt. He's the first name on the sheet at the moment. But Rhys Healy and Bio are the other options. So is there some sort of combination of those players that we've spoken about that can be tried? I've seen some people suggest that Rajovic is used against a team who play a certain way, and perhaps you go with Bio and Healy.
Sorry to cut in them. I think that probably is the best way to get the best out of them, because we've seen Rajovic have to perform a job in the last two games that really isn't him. He was having to sort of fight for the ball, try and fight for the ball, and some perhaps will say he wasn't fighting for the ball in situations a lot further up the field. He said himself that he's a sort of player, the box is his office, I think was his phrase. And we've seen that in evidence. And talk about looking at the top scorers list, he's actually joined eighth before this current round of championship fixtures on seven goals. For a player who's not played every game, came into the squad late, that's not actually a bad return, is it, really? And whilst he hasn't been perfect, like you say, that the best option might be to make better use of what we've got against the right opponents and Valerian making the right decisions ahead of each game.
Is that going to be it, though, Mike? I mean, like you said, some people want another person every single position. Are there other places that you think, yeah, we do need improvement? Or is everywhere else just maybe just numbers? We know Ngakoue is sort of injured. Could be, well, it's not long term, but it's a while. Is there any sort of obvious places where we do need to find it? And are they going to come from that, what is it they always have, without club, rather than someone who's already doing some good stuff somewhere else?
Let's quickly go from front to back. I think people would like to see a new goalkeeper. I don't think that's going to happen in January. I think Ben Hamer's come in. Valerian Ismail's made a statement with Dan Backman, who lost his place through suspension, and Ben Hamer has stepped up and done reasonably well. He has issues, just like Dan Backman does. I don't necessarily think either of them let us down, but people would like to see a new goalkeeper, and I understand fully why. I would expect to see that addressed in the summer as opposed to January. I think in terms of centre-backs, we're probably okay. Wes and Portois are our starting centre-backs. Sierra Alta can come in as well and play there. Matty Pollock as a sort of like emergency centre-back. I'm interested to see watch the progression of Jamal Lewis. I think he sort of takes turns with looking like a really threatening, really good footballer, and then looks slightly lightweight. I think, for example, last home game against Ipswich, when Wes Burns came on, I think he got slightly bullied, and that was a bit concerning to me. I'd like to see my defenders, certainly the wide defenders, being a bit tougher to get past. So whether they're looking at perhaps the left side of defence as perhaps somewhere that needs to be strengthened, not sure. Midfield, I think we're doing okay. I think we're relatively well stocked, and there are different options if you want to play slightly different styles of play. You've got Imran Luzer who can come back into the side, and players that can play around him. Ismail Kone, I think, has recently been announced Young Canadian Footballer of the Year by the Canada Football Association, I think. So congratulations to him, if you're listening, Ismail. But I think there are options in the midfield. So I think we're well stocked there. I think the question mark is keeping Jake Livermore going. I think he's so important in terms of what he brings. You know, he's a captain without the armband, the way he just goes round and cajoles everyone, keeps everyone talking. I absolutely loved the moment in the Ipswich home game where there was two balls on the pitch ahead of a corner, and the ref tried to kick off the ball, and it was the most feeble attempt, and it sort of dribbled halfway, and Jake Livermore gave him an absolute roasting and then had to go and kick the ball off himself, and the ref sort of just had to stand there and hang his head as Jake Livermore dished out this, and remember why
he's a referee and not a footballer.
The other great moment that someone drew our attention to, this was in the Southampton game. apparently, Ryan Porteous got the Southampton goalkeeper's water bottle and emptied it, just poured all the water out, which is tremendous from our Scottish centre-back. If we lose Jake Livermore for whatever reason, whether it's through suspension or whether it's having to manage him, that's a question mark. Have we got that real air of authority in the team, and without him, I don't think we have. So is there someone that we can bring in to provide that sort of, that just experience perhaps and know-how? Because if we're going to manage, if we're going to continue to grow, I think personality and that side of the slightly the intangibles are going to be important. So I'm not sure if they can look to add a bit of wisdom and a bit of some extra what Jake Livermore brings. I'm not sure, but I think, yeah, I think if we can unlock that front three, perhaps bring in another defensive recruit, then that I suspect is where Valerian Ismail will be asking the higher ups to earn their corn.
Yeah, I suppose looking at Jamal Lewis, you know, someone who is out of favour. We sort of want a bunch of those, really, don't we? Young, able, but just out of favour. That's probably the most ideal thing we're going to do. So we need a wise head. What's the other one you like to say? We need some frissons. Is that the one you like to say, Mike?
Oh, everyone likes a bit of frisson.
Up front. But we'll see what happens. We've got a couple of weeks before it all starts kicking off. And I always like it, actually. There's windows that we've had where the rumours or the... Not the rumours, but the business sort of gets announced a little bit early. Often we've had a few during the Christmas week where deals have been done and they're... what was it? Who was it? Merkel.
Alexander Merkel.
Yeah, he was announced with Matthias Rinnegi also. They were, two of them were like, oh, they're getting on their business. They're getting it done. That's good. And I really hope that, you know, if Giretta's gone, that a lot of these things are just finishing off. You know, maybe that's the thing that needs to happen over these deals that they know they're going to have to do. And we're not waiting around for too long for something to come in.
What's been great about watching this Watford side is you can tell what each player is in the side to do. Yeah. You can tell what their job is. So what I think, as a Watford supporter, what I want from this January window is for the signings to make sense. Because so often I think we've seen areas neglected or players come in where we think, well, how's he going to fit in? We've already got X, Y and Z there. So I think working on the basis that there aren't going to be huge numbers of signings, I want the ones that to come in, I want it to be obvious to me how they strengthen the squad, how they strengthen the team and how they help us on this road of sort of incremental improvement. Because we have seen that. The results haven't necessarily always gone our way, but I think as the season has gone on, this team has progressed and progressed together and are now in a situation where they're a team that we can get behind and be proud of and look forward to watching on a Saturday or Tuesday. So hopefully Gino and whoever's in charge don't sort of take it back a couple of squares by just bringing in randoms and bringing in players who obviously aren't going to fit Ismail's style of play. So
that's what I think is going to be a bit more obvious this transfer window. If you look back at the last couple of Januaries, they have sort of dealt with, or at least tried to deal with, the problems that we had. You know, you look at the fact that, you know, we brought Kone in last January, pretty much a bit more of a longer term thing. But we did bring in Hood, we did bring in Porteous. Sombalonga was a little bit of let's get another striker in, and he was free. We had two Portuguese friends who didn't really do as much we wanted them to do, but Martins came in also. So there's always that feeling of sometimes transfers are for the future, but they do deal with it. And of course, there was a Premier League where we had Samir, we had Kembe and Kamara. They did come in and the positions that we needed, they weren't necessarily good enough, but they are, you know, is that feeling that Gino is aware of what is needed and where it's needed rather than randomly buying players. If they are a bit random, I think it is because they're one for the future and they know they're getting them at a good time. Do you feel the same, Jace? Be a bit sensible with it all?
I think they'll be sensible with it all. You certainly hope so. Having got this far through this season, cutting their cloth accordingly in the summer, sticking by Valerian, you just feel doing anything, bringing in randoms, like Mike says, just would again be a step, but would be foolish. And you'd think, despite maybe some concerns we have around the ownership of the club, you'd think that they would see that. They would see that just sort of throwing a load of mud and seeing what stick would be a backward step and a foolish move. So the potential's there for it to happen, but I sincerely hope that they'll get it right and be sensible.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. Thank you very much to the Brigadier, Colin Mace, for taking us through that Preston game. Thank you very much to Michael.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And next weekend, we've got a special podcast, a very special podcast, about a very special player, Mr. Haider Helgeson. We talked about it ages ago, but actually we have got to interview the great man himself. And next weekend, we'll probably put it up especially, so if you're going to the Blackburn game, you can listen to it on the way. It is going to be a special podcast with Heider Helgeson. Me speaking to him. We also spoke to Sir Nigel Gibbs. And you'll hear our memories and our love, basically, of Heider Helgeson next weekend on a very special From the Rookery. So, enjoy your week, have fun, and come on your horns!